Hello and welcome to the latest installment of PSG Talking. I'm your host Ed, and on today's show we're previewing Paris Saint-Germain's quarterfinal clash against Barcelona in the Champions League. Now with such a massive match on the horizon, I simply couldn't go it alone this time, so we'll have Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast come on to talk about Wednesday's match from a Barcelona perspective. And we'll also have Jonathan Johnson from CBS Sports come on to give his thoughts on the match, as well as give us an update on some of the latest transfer news involving PSG. Before we get to those interviews, though, let me remind you to subscribe to this fine show wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review if you can. We're also on Substack, so subscribe to PSG Talk Extra Time. And lastly, head over to psgtalk.com for all of your Paris Saint-Germain news. All right, up first, we're going to have Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast. Now, this interview was recorded on Sunday, April 7th, and before we recorded for PSG Talking, I actually went on his show to talk about the match, Kylian Mbappe, Luis Enrique, and so much more. So make sure you subscribe to the Barcelona podcast so you don't miss that episode. Then once we're finished with Dan, you'll hear Jonathan Johnson again from CBS Sports come on. This interview was conducted last Friday, so some things like injury status may have changed since we talked, so just keep that in mind as you listen. All right, without further ado, here is the PSG Talking Barcelona preview special episode. Here's Dan Hilton from the Barcelona podcast. So Dan, thanks for joining the show. How are things on your end?
Doing okay. Obviously, the calm before the storm is always the best part because we get to do all these previews and everybody's excited and no one's angry at me and nobody's tuned out because Barcelona are out of the Champions League. So after the last two seasons of not getting out of the group stage, being in the knockouts, just being there is exciting enough. So having gotten to the second round for the first time since 2020 into the quarterfinals, it's definitely a calmer feeling, even though, as we're going to talk about, the manager is likely gone and all this stuff going on because Barcelona are always very dramatic. But that said, I think it's a good way right now. Barcelona in a good way. So at the moment, I'm doing all right.
Well, and I had this question further down my lineup, but you kind of hinted it. So let's just jump to that. So for many PSG supporters, a quarterfinal appearance this season is about as good as we hoped for. I don't think many, realistically, PSG supporters did not expect us to get to this point, especially not any further. Is that the same with Barcelona supporters, or is the expectation always at least this, if not a final? How's the fan base feeling about getting to the quarterfinals?
Well, I think when you're talking about a fan base, you're always talking, especially with Barcelona, I think you're almost talking about three different factions, if you will. There's the Catalan supporters and their expectations of living or dying with the team, regardless of what happens. There's younger fans on the internet who may have picked it up at the earliest with the Guardiola era and potentially just the legends of that and picked it up afterwards. And they're obviously, as you know, on the internet, it's very reactionary, and that is an international audience. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's that third subset, which is a lot of my listeners, which are both international, some people in Spain who are kind of going gray over the time and talking a lot about the finances, because financially, and obviously this is insane that we're doing this already, but on the back end with Barcelona and the, not even FFP, but with the wages and the income projected, they incorporated in next year's budget, making the quarterfinal of the Champions League as a minimum, which again is an absurd calculation based on not getting out of the group stage for two seasons. But this was basically the bar. And so to say that it feels fulfilled, again, there will be disappointment. And I think how you lose a match and how you might lose a tie do go a long way in how you talk about that tie. But I also think that, again, just the base expectation of getting to the quarterfinals, It's weird because that was both the expectation and it would have been a disappointment if they weren't there. But I think it was also the goal that now that they've achieved the goal, and I think going into this tie, PSG is a better team, right? And I think they're the favorites to move on in this tie, like we're going to talk about. But I think Barcelona just kind of getting there is like, okay, good. With all the talent that Barcelona did, the quarterfinal Champions League is where they belong, which does make sense in a season and in multiple seasons now that has been full of turmoil and chaos and all those different things.
You mentioned Barcelona's finances. I thought that was really interesting that they're already penciling in making the quarterfinals and expecting that money to come in. Talk a little bit about Barcelona's financials, because not me, I would never, but there's a lot of hashtag broke Barca and all this other stuff. Whenever they're linked with a player, they can't afford them. Can you just kind of level set where Barcelona's finances are? And in addition to that, Jules Koundé is a player. He's 25, if I'm not mistaken. He's French. He's a player that PSG supporters would love to sign. Do you see Barcelona having to sell some of their better players due to financial reasons?
Well, the answer is we don't know, and I don't know. I had on a reporter from The Athletic 2 weeks ago who, you know, has sources at the club, is very in the club. I know people at the club, and I can say that I don't know is the answer, because there, when it comes to sponsorships, and you're even, if you've heard about the Nike deal with Barcelona, there is money that is, we don't know about. Like, there was a deal that was made with a German company called Libero. 40 million just didn't show up. It was supposed to be delivered. It didn't show up. So now, in theory, Barcelona and their board is 40 million euros shy of what that budget was. And obviously, in Spain, the courts move a little slower. So to take legal action is going to take multiple seasons, right? And so when I say I don't know, I truly mean I don't know, because in terms of affording players as well, Barcelona, due to the income they make, and if you look up their, I mean, obviously attendance as they're redoing their stadium is a different thing, but the money projected once that stadium potentially opens up in hopefully the end of 2025, but maybe 2026 or 2027, when it's going to be the largest stadium in Europe is the plan, or have extensions available to be the largest stadium in Europe. So obviously they know that gate revenue is important. Another key factor of Barcelona's finances is that when hashtag broke Barca, that's always forgotten, is that Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Athletic Club, even, well, Valencia has an owner, but it's a different thing. Those clubs are owned by their members, or socios in Catalan. So when you're owned by your members, that means that the decisions made financially are hampered by a voting body as well, for better or worse. And you're talking about politics that exist at Barcelona that don't exist other places. So they say, oh, Laporta just says a lot of stuff and he's full of hot air, which he is. I'll admit that, of course. And he would say that, like, but that ego and that character that he has, you're like, why is this president of Barcelona such this magnanimous figure that's always in front of the camera? Well, that's because he's a politician as well, right? And the mandates are, of the five-year mandates, they come up on you pretty quickly. And they're also, in Spain, you could also have a vote of censure, which means that if enough fans are upset with you, if enough voters are upset with you, they could have you removed, which there's been votes of censure against pretty much every president that is, we'll say, under or not exceeded the expectations set for them. And Laporta, of course, getting a second term based on the goodwill of the first term with Guardiola and the golden era, of course. And so he gets the second term based on that. So when I say I don't know, is that a lot can change very quickly for Barcelona. That money could come in the mail and all that stuff, because income-wise and what they do make up top is enough to afford most players. They're still a major money-making entity. The problem is FFP. The problem is the wage bill, because the wage bill is still built on the outflated contracts that were given to the likes. I mean, and he's always in the news for this, but Frankie de Jong. Like, I love Frankie de Jong. Everybody loves Frankie de Jong. But, and I know he says it's a lie what the wages are saying, but based on what the numbers look like from the outside, and we don't, again, we don't know exactly what the numbers are, but it seems like those numbers per season are a bit inflated when, even though he agreed to a contract extension, when you're also accounting for the deferred wages that were pushed off through COVID. So COVID happening at the perfect time when Messi was at the peak of his spending power, and Piqué and Alba and Busquets. So what happened in Barcelona was, yes, they fell on their own sword economically, because their salary structure was built on arguably the greatest player of all time, right? And so they were paying everybody accordingly. So everybody that came in, Clément Lenglet, or whoever it was, I mean, Andre Gomes, like, whoever was coming in was getting a wage that was befitting where they fit in that wage structure, which was inflated, right? And Bartomeu also was a pretty corrupt president as well. So even though that corrupt president is gone, COVID is 4 years past, you still see the shadow looming large over the finance of the club. So they're still every year dealing with that. And then last season with the Palencas, of course, pulling the levers, as they're called, to bring in Lewandowski and Koundé and Rafinha and Ferran Torres, as you mentioned, the January before that. It was money that socios and Barcelona fans felt like if you were going to spend that money, you had to get it absolutely right. And so that's why those players in particular, even though Rafinha's goal contributions have been nice, it's just like, unless he's a super duper 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 star, like, is he worth the money that Barcelona paid for him? And I think it's really difficult for any of these players, Coutinho, Antoine Griezmann, to fulfill what was the promise of these contracts and inflated transfer fees and all this stuff. So to When you said the word finances, I was like, I should put a disclaimer here that it's going to be a little bit of a thing. But I think I did it as succinctly as I possibly could. That Barcelona is not broke. They're not in financial trouble, but they are in financial trouble to even register players or bring in new signings. Because to your point, the three players that are brought up about transfers are, I've said Koundé and Rafinha, but even those two have amortization on their contract. So it's difficult to sell those players. And that's why the guy that's being rumored now is Ronald Araujo, who is a captain, who is a player that nobody wants to part with. But he might be the only player who is technically homegrown because he came into Barca B, who's technically on a, we'll say, club-friendly deal. And you could sell him for $80 million, and that will go directly into the wage. You don't have to spend any amortization on that. So that's why Araujo is a name that's brought up. And that would be the example of the difficult decision to be made by the club.
I feel like I just learned so much more about Barcelona finances in that last few minutes there. I thank you for explaining that. And it, like you said, it would be nice if Barcelona could sell a player like Koundé, sell high. I think PSG would probably, meet whatever the transfer fee or close to it. But there's other stipulations, other things going on with the contracts that might make that a little bit difficult. So,
Ed, I have a dream. I have a dream that one day I will not have to say the word amortization every week. There will come a day when I don't have to talk about the Spanish courts and da, 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 you know what I mean? Like, I dream of the day where I just get to look at transfer targets and go, "Whoa, did you guys see Messinho, the kid from Palmeiras?" Like, someday.
PSG fans would just be lucky. We don't have any of that. We've got one guy, he writes the check. It's so much. I don't know how you deal with all the amateurization and the different supporters groups. There's a lot going on at Barcelona. I don't know how you wrap your head around it, but you did a great job there. Let's take a look at Barcelona's kind of recent results. They played Las Palmas. It feels like a month ago now. Maybe it was 10 days. They won 1-0 over Las Palmas. But give me a rundown on Barcelona's form, who's injured, who may play on Wednesday, who may not. Just kind of where do things stand right now with Barcelona?
Well, right now, Barcelona is in their best way, arguably in a year and a half since they beat Real Madrid last January in the Spanish Super Cup and went on a little good stretch there to kind of close out La Liga before they, we'll say, slowed things down the stretch there, already being eliminated from the Champions League and Europa League, whatever. So 11 games unbeaten is a pretty good run here. And they've done most of that without Frankie de Jong and without Pedri. Right now, as you mentioned, Jules Koundé, he started the season in tremendous form, kind of dipped off a little bit, is now back to really good form. Araujo went through a few poor weeks there, some of the worst weeks he'd had, and now he seems to be rounding in the last 3 weeks, back in a really good form. It also coincided with Ter Stegen being out. Ter Stegen was out for a while, Iñaki Peña, the backup goalkeeper, was in there, and while Iñaki Peña is a good shot stopper and he's good with his feet, there was something about commanding the box and that institutional trust that exists for a team that does play a high line that didn't exist, and with Ter Stegen coming back, you can feel the leadership back there because, again, Araujo, Koundé, their level went back up. Cancelo's level also returned, I think, to good fitness, which has also been helped by, I'm going to talk about the teenager in a second. Let's go to the other players. Obviously, Gabi is out for the season. So, I think PSG fans are happy, not happy, but, fortunate to see that because Gabi, obviously.
Never like to see injuries. At least
He was Barcelona's best player for the first 3 months of the year. So he's been a big miss. And then De Jong, he's going to be fit whether or not Xavi decides to start him or whether or not he just kind of wants to continue it. I know we'll go with starting lineups later, but I think he will be fit. Pedri will not be, I don't think they're going to throw him out there for the first leg. I think he's going to be on the bench. So I think he's going to be somebody that Luis Enrique, obviously who knows really well from the Spanish national team, is going to look over and go, "Oh, you're going to put Pedri in the 60th minute?" Because he is somebody that can change a game because he is such a talent in Pedri, but I don't expect to see him. And then up top, Lewandowski is going to be the starter, the consummate starter. Ferran Torres just came back against Las Palmas. João Félix is, your guess as a PSG fan is as good as mine, is what you're going to get from game to game. And then I think obviously you're going to probably restructure a new question for me because the next guys I really need to talk to and talk about are about Lamine Yamal and Pau Gabarsi.
We'll take it from there. Tell me, what do PSG supporters need to know about those two players?
Well, they're young. If you combine their ages, that if you do the math, that is about how old I am. So it does make me feel old. But Lamine Yamal and Pau Gabarsi, as Barcelona's form in the last month, have been as good as it has been, they have also, I think, been Barcelona's two best players, which again is a scary proposition to say. Barcelona's success rides on the back of a 16-year-old attacker and a 17-year-old center back, but they have been that mature, that up to the task, and it's almost scary as to how reliant Barcelona have been on them. However, like I've said, a 16-year-old, you never want to play them more than, what, 2,000 minutes of the season? And Lamine Yamal is already at 2,300 minutes, 2,500 counting the Spanish national team. And then Cubarsí has already, when counting the Barça Athletic matches in third division, he's already played like 1,500 professional minutes this season, having just turned 17 as well. But Cubarsí is the best ball-playing center back that Barça have had. And I know Piqué just left, but I'm saying coming from the academy since Piqué. So I'm saying going back 15, 16 years. Again, when he made his debut at 16. And Lamine Yamal, I'm not going to say any names. I'm not going to make any connections. But people have actually said, and I think Neymar at 16 at Santos is actually a pretty fair comparison. And I know Spain and Europe and the Champions League is different than Santos when Neymar was 16 in was 2007 or whatever it was. Yeah. But I think that's actually a fair comparison. Lamine Yamal, he is not a touchline winger. He can come inside. His left foot is really dangerous, but he just is a natural player. It flows. The game is easy for him. And the same thing with Cubarsí. The game is easy for them. And they've put Xavi in a position that he has to start them. So Lamine Yamal will be starting on the right wing against PSG. And that means that on the left wing, is it going to be João Félix? Is it going to be Rafinha playing out of position? Or is it going to be Ferran Torres as an option? I've heard Vitor Roque, but Vitor Roque will not be starting. So basically, it's all you veteran. I know Ferran Torres is still in his early 20s, but basically all you veteran left wingers or right wingers, whatever, you have to figure out the other side because the right winger is a 16-year-old. And the question is going to be whether Araujo starts at right center back or left center back. But I think he'll be on the right at center back just to contend with Mbappe. And Cubarsí, who is also a right-footed center back, he's been just as good. Like his diagonal balls from the left to the right, it doesn't matter. So those two, I cannot say enough about how PSG fans should be afraid of children, of teenagers, the same way that we talked on my show about Thierry Emery, that I'm most afraid of the teenagers in this tie. And then Kylian Mbappe.
Of course, yeah, there's always that guy, Kylian Mbappe. Now, I kind of joke that Barcelona haven't played for a month, and so there's always this rest versus rust, and you know what's better. Do you want to be rested, or should you be playing? So with Barcelona having been off for a while, PSG have played multiple games since Barcelona played their last game. Would you have rather played maybe at least one more match leading up to this PSG match in Paris, or do you like having all this time to rest and prepare and watch footage and train? Do you like that? What do you think?
Well, Ed, my answers have already been too long, so I'm going to answer it in two words and say no, rested. Barcelona fans know that a healthy Barcelona, or even a rotated Barcelona, is not something you get to see very often. Because of COVID, because of the squad stuff I've talked about, depth has not been a big thing. And I guess to add to this question, when talking about Lamine Yamal and Cubarsí, yes, the Dembélé transfer did have to do with Lamine Yamal getting a spot in the first team, but it's also been a necessity. Like Barcelona's squad needed Hector Fort, the young 17-year-old right back, and they needed Marc Guiu, the 18-year-old center forward. They needed La Masia to step up for them. And even with Balde going down for the season, in a very fortuitous kind of bit of luck here, that this is the best generation from La Masia, from the academy, that born from like 2006 to 2009, that I have seen since I'm, without hyperbole, the 87 generation, which was Messi, Piqué, Fabregas, and Victor Valdez. So that class, this class is just, they're so ready, they're so professional, and it's been very lucky for Barcelona that this group of teenagers has been this ready to contribute, because this squad is not a deep squad at all. So rested is always the most important part.
Good to know. Yeah, and we talked about on your show, PSG, they've had to go to Marseille. They played Rennes in a cup semifinal. So they've had a couple of really tough tests for them. Against Clermont yesterday, we were able to rotate some players and get Mbappe a little bit of rest. But I want to talk about him next, because you kind of hinted at a little bit of what Barcelona could do at their center back, maybe move some things around. But how in the world is Barcelona going to slow down Mbappe, who has been on a tear this season? We saw what he did at Barcelona a couple years ago in the Champions League. He had the hat trick. So what's going to be different this time? How are you going to stop Mbappe?
I think a few weeks or even months ago, when both Araujo and Koundé were kind of having their dip in form, I would have thought that Xavi would have done what he does against Vinny Jr. and started Araujo at right back, which they've seen. That's basically been the El Clasico move. But I think with the form that Koundé is in, his familiarity in the French national team with Mbappe and their relationship, I think that you at least begin this game with Koundé at right back. You trust your laurels to say, hey, can you take him 1v1 enough to have Araujo slide over when necessary? Because I think you keep Araujo in the middle of that field. And we even saw against Man United, Xavi kind of overthought this in the Europa League last season when he started Araujo at right back to kind of contend with Marcus Rashford. Rashford started in the middle, and it was too late in the match that change was made. And I think Xavi hopefully learned from that experience. So I think it'll be Koundé starting 1v1 against Mbappe with Araujo as the right center back shading over. If healthy, because he was also rested apparently against Las Palmas just for caution, and that's Christensen. Barcelona had been much better, speaking about this unbeaten run as well. Yes, the teenagers have been relied on as so much, but Christensen has been trotted out as a pivot and has been good enough. Not necessarily good at turning on the ball. He is susceptible to high press and high pressure, which I think PSG might do at home to him.
Yeah.
But Christensen has been very important defensively, having basically another center back there to drop in and contend. And as I said, if De Jong is healthy, he'll be the one to start at the left center back of that makeshift double pivot. And he'll be moving over to help with Dembele and helping Cancelo, because Cancelo is going to want to get forward. And then it'll be Christensen to drop, I think, a little bit to either the center of the park to deal with whoever the center forward is for PSG with Araujo. They just have to have their communication, you know, up to task. So either Christensen or Araujo, somebody's going to have to drop in and deal with the center forward. And the other player is going to have to, you know, shift over and move over to slide to deal with the double team on Mbappe. And that's why a player like Vitinha for your squad kind of coming in for a late run in the box, or Fabian Ruiz, is that's the other worry, right? Like, how do you defend? And what is the other center midfielder like Gundogan? Is he going to, you know, drop in, and is he going to defend that late run in? Because, you know, if he's pushing a little farther forward like he has with Christensen, there are holes to be found. I think that chess match between Luis Enrique and Xavi is obviously, you know, the biggest questions early on is how is Barcelona going to deal with PSG's attack? I think that's the most important question.
Yeah, not enough is being said about the matchup between the two managers. It's really high profile, two really tactically smart managers. It'll be really interesting to see that chess match. I just want to stick on Mbappe for a second. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about facing him next season when he makes as we all expect him to make that move to Real Madrid. Number one, how in the world are they affording that? And yeah, just are you looking forward to seeing him season after season?
You know, it's funny. My next door neighbors, they are always banging the side of my house with a ball, which is good. I'm excited for the future. Those kids always have two jerseys on. They're either wearing the Mbappe PSGs or they've got their Real Madrids. And I've tried my best. I have said every time they're wearing it, that's the only time I yell at them. I'm like, I don't care. Just don't hit my air conditioning unit. Just hit the side of the house where the concrete is. But yes, the next generation of PSG fans and Real Madrid fans, there will be overlap because of Kylian Mbappe, certainly. He's definitely going to Real Madrid. But I think the answer about how they're affording him is that they have done a good job with, they did not spend in numerous transfer windows throughout COVID. Florentino Perez is a major industrial mogul. He owns a lot of, as you know, property is the way to really amass wealth, unless you're, you know, using a government, if you will, world football. So I think he's obviously used his reputation. He is the leader. He is the Sith Lord, if you're a Star. I'm not a Star Wars fan, but I think that's the right, that's the right reference there. He is the Sith Lord for
that's
Barcelona.
A great way to put it. He is the Sith Lord.
Kind of just sitting up in his box and spending the money. But I think for Barcelona fans, especially with Cubarsí and Lamine Yamal, I think the way that, you know, whether we're doing it just out of sheer hubris or we're just trying to convince ourselves that everything's going to be okay, the idea that Barcelona get players from their academy and they have a system, they have a program, and they have a plan. And then again, with their stadium being rebuilt even if Mbappe shows up and lights the world on fire for two seasons or three seasons, of course, they'll be painful. But the idea, it's a funny thing, too. I was once, I know I'm going to story time here, but I was once kind of tricked into going on a Real Madrid podcast. Two kids kind of said, they said that it would be professional and said it'd be fun. And I walk into this is trap. I'm trying to be like, you know, be judicial and be fair. And they're just smacking me everywhere. But I'll say to you what I said to them. Real Madrid needs Barcelona and Barcelona needs Real Madrid. And those two will, until way, way after, you know, I'm buried deep in the ground or cremate me or whatever, those two will be in a forever battle, Real Madrid and Barcelona. So they need each other as much as they hate each other. And it's, to me, the best rivalry in the world, those two. So am I afraid of Mbappe? Of course. Yeah. Of course. I think that I'm more afraid of him not in El Clasico than I am in him constantly popping up against whoever, Almeria, Cadiz, right? Real Sociedad or Athletic Club, and him just winning Real Madrid points that they don't deserve over the next few seasons in the league. I'm worried that he's going to be what wins Real Madrid the league by 7 or 8 every year, more than I am afraid of him, you know, versus Barcelona, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And again, another great segue, because I want to talk about rivalries. Barcelona, PSG, we know what happened, you know, in 2017. I'm not going to use that word. Rivalry was renewed in 2021, if I'm not mistaken. We saw Mbappe score a hat trick. In terms of just the Champions League, is Barcelona versus PSG, is that the best rivalry in the Champions League right now?
I don't know about that. I think, like, Sergio Roberto was in the news this week, funny enough, because he might be renewing with the club, which, again, is something I've talked about on my show. But Sergio Roberto, of course, he's the figure that I think the Catalan media is kind of pushing this week as the captain or whatever, just because, again, trying to remind PSG fans of what he did. But that was also a long time ago. I mean, that was 7 years ago already. That was the first year I was doing the show, even when, you know, and I was like on my way to work, and then it kind of all happened. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I need to contact all this stuff. And so I don't know if it's the best rivalry in the Champions League, just because I think it's a moment in time, is kind of how I say it. Like, that moment happened, and then, you know, PSG kind of got the revenge, and it's not like this fixture. I don't know. I would have said even it's a better rivalry 2-3 years ago, when it felt like they were competing for Frankie de Jong or they were competing for the same transfers. I feel like they're not really, you know, that pull, that give and take behind the scenes doesn't feel like the same thing. I also think Luis Enrique is such an important figure for both clubs now that he is kind of this olive branch in a way, if that makes sense. So I don't know. I don't think it's like the same kind of hot-blooded rivalry that you'd see from domestic opponents, right? Like, if in the final Barcelona met Real Madrid, I mean, that is what it is, right? Yeah. Or, like you mentioned, PSG against Marseille, I think, is bigger. Honestly, PSG Bayern Munich, to me, feels like it has the same weight in the last few seasons that it has with Barcelona, just because losing in the final and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I could necessarily say that. I think the Premier League teams also have their own kind of their own thing going, you know, and I know that they didn't do so well, or they didn't so hot in the other rounds. But yeah, I think when it's Liverpool against Man City, you know, and they're meeting the Champions League, I think there's a little more fire to that. But I don't know, maybe I'm just outplaying it, but I just don't. And maybe it's, again, just part, I'm not trying to, like, you know, throw PSG off and say, well, you don't have the history. I'm not saying that. I just feel like the Atletico Madrid is also potentially awaiting Barcelona in the semifinals as well. So, I mean, I think there are rivalries to be found throughout this competition for Barcelona.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I'm just kind of looking back. There's been, you know, Messi and Neymar and Ronaldinho, just a lot of players. Ibrahimovic has played for both. There's quite a bit of overlap. And then just all the animosity that goes into that 6-1. I mean, as a PSG supporter, we don't even see that as, like, you know, didn't even happen. The ref was compromised. You know, there's some bad blood. We saw the supporters were chanting things about Barcelona yesterday after the Clermont match. So I think there's a little bad blood, but you're right. There probably is some other rivalries out there that maybe are a little bit better, but this one's heating up. And I like that both sides have won.
Well, I don't want to, like, you know, make this about or demean PSG fans, but I do think that the Messi thing is kind of a PSG side of things and not necessarily a Barcelona side of things, because even though Messi left in a way that he didn't want to, like the way he left, especially, like, that the club, like, kind of let him down, like, could not bring him back. I think he is still Barcelona's son, right? He's still like the guy for Barcelona fans. And so many Barcelona fans also would watch PSG for Messi, right? And not, they weren't necessarily rooting for PSG, but they were watching because of their guy. So I think in this, in that way, based on Messi, the animosity would be a little one-sided in that I don't know if Messi fully delivered to PSG what Messi, the Barcelona Messi, would have promised. And I think there is a little bit of bad blood based on Messi kind of not being the Messi who Barcelona fans were like, yeah, of course, you're getting Messi. We're heartbroken. And then he winds up not being, you know, the greatest player of all time, which is what he is. I mean, I still think he was, but like, and you know, he winds up winning World Cup in Argentina, which I do think was his main focus while he was at PSG to win the World 100%. Cup. He did.
100%. Yeah, the Messi, that's probably a topic for a whole different podcast, but the comments after he left, he clearly didn't want to be here. You could tell. Yeah. And yeah, it was a problem. All right, I got two more quick questions for you. The first one, I just want to ask you about Xavi Simons. He's a player who came up through the Barcelona Academy. He's at PSG, but on loan at Leipzig right now. Is he one that got away from you, or do you guys just don't even think about him really? I mean, what is the sentiment around Xavi Simons from a Barcelona perspective?
Well, Barcelona kind of got themselves stuck when he left a few years ago in a position where they could not pay academy kids huge numbers. And Barcelona have a system and an academy that says, like, for better or worse, and this is a Cruyff adage, and you know, there's a lot of mottos and eye rolling that can be done, but if a 16-year-old is asking for too much and he doesn't want to be there, then don't say. And that's kind of what happens. And at the time, the late Riola was his agent, even at 16. He had obviously all the following and everything. And at the time, he was a center midfielder in a class, as I just said, with this generation of a lot of center midfielders. Like, would he have gotten those minutes over Pedri? Probably not. Would he have gotten his chance over Gavi? Probably not. Like, those players arguably were better than him. And so the journey he has been on since he left Barcelona, and it didn't even really occur even at PSG. That happened at PSV when they moved him up top or moved him into that attacking midfielder false nine role. And then what he's done this season at RB Leipzig as well in that more attacking position. He's really, I know he's still 20, but he has reinvented himself as a player as to who he always was. These last two seasons at PSV and RFC Leipzig and RB Leipzig are who he could be. So I wouldn't say he's one that got away, because there's no chance in my mind that he is who he is today without leaving Barcelona. And then even heading out on loans and leaving PSG. I think who he is based on the path that he has gone on. So I wish him all the best. Very, very much like Danny Olmo, another RB Leipzig player, by the way. Yeah. It'd be great to see them back in a uniform, but A, it has to come at the right price, and B, it has to make sense. It has to make sense for everybody, and the timing has to be right. So yeah.
And I think that's fair. And even PSG didn't realize what he was going to become. I think he was, I don't even think it was a loan to PSV, or maybe it was, but then PSG had like this buyback for, you know, 4 million or something, which is crazy given his potential. And so, yeah, the loan at Leipzig, he's just done well. I think he led the Eredivisie in scoring, and, you know, we've seen what he's done to get to the knockout stage with Leipzig. So it's going to be fun. Hopefully we'll meet Barcelona again next season, or maybe in the next couple seasons, and he'll have a chance to go against Barcelona. That'll be, of course, a storyline that you and I will be talking about. All right, Dan, let's get you out on this one. Give me, maybe just run down your quick starting 11 and give me your prediction on how you think the match on Wednesday is going to turn out.
Yeah, I think, I'm assuming that Frankie de Jong and Christensen are fit and healthy and ready to start with this. So I think Xavi goes with what has been, over the last 11 game unbeaten streak, I'd say the best quality starting 11. Well, technically without De Jong, but I'm going to put De Jong back in for Sergio Roberto or Fermin Lopez. So I think the starting 11 that at least I would pick would be Ter Stegen in net, of course, Cancelo at left back, and then Cubarsí as the left center back, Araujo, Koundé along the back line, Christensen as the defensive midfielder, technically in a double pivot, but it's a 4-3-3. So with De Jong in midfield, and then Gundogan farther forward from them. And I know I didn't really talk about him, but Gundogan's arguably having his best season, and I don't want to kind of underrate how good he's been. So if he winds up being the man of the match on Wednesday, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. He has been tremendous this season for Barcelona, and he's going to wind up finishing the season with over 4,000 or 4,200 minutes, and he's 33 years old. So I don't know what he'll do in the remaining seasons, but he has really been fantastic. And to get him on a free transfer, just like Christensen last year, great piece of business. But yes, Gundogan up top, in the midfield, but pushing farther forward. And then I know it's going to be Lamine Yamal on the right. And then I would assume it's going to be Rafinha on the left, believe it or not, playing out of position. but helping with the defensive duties against Dembélé. Really just, you know, dropping in and then trying to counter, as you mentioned, if PSG is on the front foot with possession, then Rafinha trying to get in behind and force PSG and what is sometimes a high line to make a mistake and get in behind and be that runner. And then it'll be Lewandowski in the middle. So I do think that 11, to a degree, based on health, does kind of right itself because, as I said before, the depth of Barcelona isn't there. But Pedri on the bench, hopefully it's, you know, a little bit of fear there. And, I mean, who knows who else Xavi could possibly trust coming in this game late. Ferran Torres, likely, João Félix. Those are kind of the wild cards coming in off the bench.
Is there anyone at the risk of being suspended? They get a yellow card? I probably could look it up. But do you know off the top of your head?
I don't think so. I think it's just in the league. Lewandowski, Cancelo in the league. So I think that Barcelona are all good to go in as far as suspensions.
Perfect. And I don't think you gave me a score prediction. We talked about it on your show, but has it changed in the 30 minutes or so?
It is not. I will say for you, now it's a safer place for me to say this. Yeah. I do think that in the first leg, it will be 2-1 to PSG. I just think at home in Paris, even though Barcelona have arguably been better on the road than they have been at home this season, I just think PSG protecting their home field. And not to say that the rest didn't help Barcelona, but I'm a little bit more afraid of that attacking force at home that PSG has. And again, Barcelona and Frankie de Jong not fully fit and kind of figuring this out. So I'm not saying that they're going to win the tie. You didn't ask me what's going to happen back at the at Montjuic, but I do think my prediction was the first leg Wednesday is 2-1 PSG.
Yeah, and it could be Kylian Mbappe's last Champions League home match for PSG. We'll have to see if PSG can make it through. Thank you so much for listening to this show, PSG Talking. And make sure you go over and listen to Dan Hilton and the Barcelona podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. Again, I was on his show. We had a great chat about all things PSG and Barcelona. I gave my prediction, so I won't say it here. So you got to go to his show and hear what my prediction was. So go ahead and do that, the Barcelona podcast. Dan, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. We'll hopefully have you on for the return leg.
Yeah, for sure.
Welcome back to the show, Jonathan. Always good to have you on. How are things on your end? I think I saw that you were at the Coupe de France match on Wednesday between PSG and Rennes. Is that right?
I was indeed. Thanks a lot for having me back on. Always a pleasure and very much looking forward to the next week or so. Obviously, a big game on the horizon. Big games, in fact.
Apologies if you want to hear that match dissected against Clermont, but we're going to skip to next Wednesday because that's the big one. PSG, they host Barcelona in the Champions League. Let's get into that one. Jonathan, these are two sides with recent history, as we all know. In your opinion, would you say this is a true rivalry? And if so, where do you sort of rank this among rivalries that typically only occur in the Champions League?
I mean, it's a really good question. Do I consider it a rivalry? Yes. I think it has become a rivalry over the years, certainly since PSG has come into Qatari ownership. I think it's something that, you know, was really fostered, especially over the first couple of years of Qatari ownership, because PSG came up against Barcelona a couple of times in quick succession. Similar thing happened with Chelsea as well, but obviously the rivalry didn't develop to quite the same levels. And, you know, obviously when you have an event as traumatic as Remontada, I think that, you know, basically guarantees a sort of level of animosity that's never really going to die down. Then you had, you know, sort of a separate kind of battle as well off the pitch, you know, with PSG looking to take some of Barcelona's best talents. So it's something that has certainly developed into a bit of a modern continental rivalry, I think you could say. But you know, I think sort of obviously based on the last time that these two met, you know, PSG were in better shape than Barcelona then, even if the remainder of Maurizio Pochettino's time in charge didn't quite live up to some of those early performances, especially in Europe. And you know, I think as well it's you know, going to be really interesting to see these two sides going up against each other, because PSG of course are now coached by Luis Enrique, who was famously the Barcelona manager for Remontada. So yeah, it's a game steeped in sort of history and a lot of funny little quirks. And you know, I'm looking forward to seeing sort of you know, how the contrasting emotions kind of manifest themselves on the pitch on both sides, because obviously a lot has gone on, a lot has changed since the last time the two met, even if it was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the only one that comes to mind is here recently is just Manchester City, Real Madrid, and all the talent on the pitch when those two get together. But Barcelona PSG feels like it has a little bit more of that venom to it, a little bit more hatred, just because, like you described there, some of the past history and the comebacks and Messi coming from Barcelona to PSG. There's some bad blood there. So I think it's probably the best rivalry we have going in the Champions League right now. You mentioned Luis Enrique. Put yourself in his shoes for a moment. If there's one Barcelona player that PSG needs to shut down in order to win, who is that and how do you pull it off?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think, you know, Barcelona are a better team than they were a couple of years ago when PSG came up against them, but I wouldn't say that they're sort of without, you know, their flaws. I mean, I think, you know, focusing on some of the younger talents certainly is something that Luis Enrique is going to have to do. I think Lamine Yamal is a very exciting young talent and definitely one of the brightest young stars in world football. So it's natural that Luis Enrique would be a bit preoccupied about him. I think it's useful as well having someone like Ousmane Dembele, who was playing for Barcelona so recently, you know, even sort of sampled a bit of Xavi's approach to games. So I think he'll be extremely useful in terms of what he can add, not necessarily, you know, tactically, but also in terms of sort of getting inside Xavi's mind, which, you know, Luis Enrique is well placed to do as well. Obviously, having sort of played alongside him, having, you know, come through the ranks as well and sort of taken the likes of Xavi and the likes of Iniesta under his wing as one of the senior players. So I think, you know, that approach would be intelligent. I wouldn't say I'm as worried for PSG about, you know, players like Lewandowski these days. It's more sort of somebody like potentially like a Frenkie de Jong, maybe somebody who is technically excellent and can have some very influential games on their day, but also at the same time hasn't necessarily hit the heights that were expected of him when he moved. And obviously that was also part of the sort of PSG-Barcelona rivalry as well, competing for signing players like that. De Jong, one of the battles that Barcelona obviously won, you know, but PSG have won a couple of them sort of over the years as well, most famously Neymar, but also Dembele later on. So, you know, I certainly think that PSG should really be focused defensively on sort of dealing with Barcelona's attacking threats. But, you know, a lot of that is probably going to play out in the midfield. So getting the midfield approach correct, I think, will remedy quite a few of those problems that Barcelona could pose in attack if allowed too much of the ball.
Well, the good news for PSG is that they'll have no Hakimi, and Skriniar looked really bad the last time we saw him. The PSG defense has looked better before. Right now, they're just not playing very well. So I don't have a lot of high hopes that they'll be able to slow down Barcelona, but hopefully we can apply some pressure, and that's what I want to get to next. Other than Mbappe, who at PSG needs to have a stellar performance in order for them to win this match? Who needs to be the standout player other than Mbappe? We know what he needs to do. He probably will, but who else will you be looking at PSG?
I mean, I think there's two real candidates for that. Well, maybe three, actually, because Donnarumma's form has generally been very, very good so far this season. So him making, you know, key saves will be useful as well. But if I had to pick, you know, somebody else to sort of be second or maybe third in line behind Mbappe, I think Dembele is one. And when I say need Dembele to have a stellar performance, it's not necessarily that we sort of need him to be at a better level than he's been recently, because generally speaking, he has been, you know, quite productive. I think it's just one of those ones where you really need Dembele to, you know, have one of those evenings where everything comes together, including the finishing as well. I think I can't remember who it was, but somebody in the press said the other day that, you know, basically if Dembele had some finished product, he would have won multiple Ballon d'Ors already. So, yeah, it does kind of feel a bit like that at times. And I think, you know, this is the kind of the moment that you would hope, you know, Dembele is capable of delivering one of his highest quality performances. I remember in the second leg of PSG Barca a couple of years ago, he was absolutely electric at Parc des Princes. So would definitely take some of that if he's got it in his locker. The other one, I think, that will be key in terms of the midfield will be Warren Zaïre-Emery. You know, he hasn't quite looked the same as he did before his injury since recovering. But that's, you know, that's natural. You know, that's also part and parcel of, you know, bringing on such a prodigious young talent. That's not to say that his level has dropped off completely, because it hasn't. But I do think that this will be a real test of his mettle, his maturity, which we know he has. And yeah, there is sort of a worry as well, I guess, that Luis Enrique might try and play him out of position at right back to sort of fill in the absence of Hakimi. And, you know, I do think that that could be a bit risky in terms of the midfield composition. So I think those are certainly the two other kind of players that I'd be most focused on coming into the game, because I think if you accept that PSG aren't going to be, you know, completely solid defensively, then you can approach the game much more pragmatically. One thing that I am sort of slightly baffled about really has been just the kind of refusal from Luis Enrique to sort of give Mukiele enough game time to have been ready for this kind of match, because it feels like he would have been you know, the natural pick to replace Hakimi if he was sort of fully fit. But it, you know, feels like we barely ever see him really, even if sometimes in the minutes that he does get on the pitch, it looks quite encouraging. So yeah, it's a strange one. But for me, I think Dembele and Warren Zaïre-Emery would be the two main performers outside of Mbappe that I'd be looking at on the PSG side.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Dembele have a great performance against his former club. Also, I saw a report that Bradley Barcola is back in training. We know he went down with that hamstring with the under 23 team for France. You think he probably doesn't get a starting role, but do you think he plays major minutes against Barcelona, or do you think PSG, they don't risk him and they rest him?
I mean, hopefully he does get onto the pitch, because, you know, Barcola has been an important part of what PSG have been able to do the last couple of weeks, having that width, you know, having that speed and trickery to hurt opponents, I think would have been, you know, completely ideal really going up against Barcelona. But yeah, you're right, you know, it's possibly unlikely that he's fit enough to start. So, you know, I do think that how Luis Enrique manages his minutes, if he risks him at all, you know, could be quite telling. And yeah, maybe it's an opportunity for somebody like Asensio, especially after sort of picking up, you know, an assist the other day, to possibly get a shot up against a team that he knows very well as well. So despite it being a blow, obviously, maybe not having a Barcola 100% fit, it does open the door to some of PSG's other talents.
All right, let's wrap up the Barcelona talk here. Can I get a prediction? How do you see this match going? Just kind of an overall prediction on what you think is going to happen next week.
I think PSG will come out on top. Wouldn't surprise me if there's a couple of goals. So I'd probably go something like a 2-1. I think if PSG could come away with a clean sheet, having scored more than once, that would be an extremely positive outcome. But I'm going to sort of hedge my bets, and I think Barca will probably get one. So I'd say, yeah, 2-1 sounds about right.
2-1. I think I probably agree with you. We know PSG will score goals. They typically, in the Champions League at home, they will score goals. It's just, like you said, without Hakimi and the defense being a little shaky, can they keep a clean sheet with the form that Donnarumma has been in? Certainly is a good chance for PSG to keep that clean sheet. He's in great form. All right, Jonathan, let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about transfers, rumors that are going on. Let's start with Lenny Yoro, that saga. It's really come down, well, let me ask you, has it come down to PSG and Real Madrid, or do you think that Chelsea and Manchester United could come in and kind of turn his head and sign him instead? How do you feel, where's this whole transfer saga standing at this moment?
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. It certainly seems to be more of a sort of Real or PSG, and sort of the latest noises suggest that Real could be close. But, you know, he's been very close to the top of PSG's list for quite some time. So, you know, I don't think it's quite over just yet. Obviously, the Mbappe saga is sort of, you know, dragging out again, as, you know, very few people will be surprised to hear. So it's I mean, it could go either way. You know, you can sort of understand Euro looking at Real Madrid as an opportunity, you know, very similar to sort of Rafael Varane when he left Lens for Real. But also at the same time, you know, PSG now is a completely different proposition to PSG sort of, you know, 12 months ago. And there is, you know, sort of an obvious kind of pathway to development and success for Euro as well. And also, we don't even know what the end of the season is going to hold for Lille as well. You know, the expectation is that they will go out of the Europa Conference League to Aston Villa. But Villa, as my team, I can tell you, are blowing sort of hot and cold at the moment. So it's not maybe going to be as easy as many people are making it out to be. So, you know, it could be, you know, a good end to the season for Lille, who are still in Champions League qualification contention in the Ligue 1 table as well. There's obviously that extra European place that's going to come into play if PSG win the Coupe de France. So, you know, I think that there is sort of that aspect might weigh on Euro as well, depending on how Lille finish, which competition they qualify for. Obviously, the future of Fonseca, you know, could be influential as well. Plus the fact that Lille, you know, are probably going to have to brace themselves for suitors coming in, not just for Euro, but for someone like Zegrova as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a decisive sort of couple of weeks, you feel. But, yeah, it's certainly a target that PSG have placed great importance on. And regarding sort of Chelsea and Manchester United, Chelsea without European football, I really don't think we're in the kind of position to spend big and you know, go for somebody of that kind of talent who really needs to continue his development on the continental scene. And Manchester United, a lot will depend on the changes that will presumably be made at the end of the season, notably in terms of Erik ten Hag and sort of the setup there in terms of recruiting talent. They were very keen on Todibo. That seems to have gone a bit quiet. So, yeah, maybe they will try and come to the table for Euro, but that's assuming that Euro's future has not already been tied up.
Yeah, Todibo is a player that's kind of hasn't had as many rumors, but if PSG do lose out on Euro, certainly turn your attention to him. He would be a great signing. There's a player at Barcelona. We know there's been a lot of Barcelona players that have made the jump to PSG over the years, but Jules Koundé, would he make sense for PSG if they want to go and sign him to improve their center back position? You know, he's French, he's young at 25. Is he the ideal signing, or would he be too pricey for PSG?
I think there's probably scope to do quite a good deal at the moment, given Barcelona's perilous financial situation, where I think they would have to listen to sensible offers as opposed to just charging, you know, ridiculous prices for somebody like Koundé. And I think his profile is interesting as well. Like you said, predominantly a central defender, but has been, you know, has played at right back at times when asked, not just for Barcelona, but also for the French national team as well. It's not always worked out quite that well at right back, but while Hakimi is in Paris, you wouldn't expect him to be dislodged from the starting 11 when fit. So sort of having somebody like Koundé who could potentially start in central defence and then sometimes go out wide into the right back position might actually be you know, a very sensible setup. I mean, I also think that there needs to be sort of better kind of depth on the right-hand side of the central defensive pairing. Obviously, we've seen Marquinhos out of the team recently, and it still kind of feels like we're seeing Danilo Pereira more times in defence than is possibly needed. So certainly, you know, seeing how fragile some of the summer defensive signings have been, and obviously the need to sign Beraldo as well in the winter window. I think, you know, Koundé would make a bit of sense, assuming that PSG miss out on Euro.
And then I want to talk about Xavi Simons, because he's a player, I think the latest reports are that PSG are going to bring him back from loan from Leipzig. But there was a lot of reports about how he wanted either Mbappe or Neymar to depart, and that determined whether he would come back from PSV. My question is, do you think Arsenal, and there's been a lot of reports about this and rumors, but do you think Arsenal would have made a move for Xavi Simons had Mbappe ended up staying beyond this season and maybe Xavi Simons started looking elsewhere? Do you think Arsenal was maybe the league contender to sign him?
I mean, possibly, but also at the same time, I'm not entirely sure that I see, you know, Mbappe necessarily as being an obstacle to Xavi Simons having a place at PSG. I think that you could, you know, feasibly have Xavi Simons fitting in with PSG and have PSG known that Xavi Simons was going to be at this level with Leipzig. You know, they might have thought twice about loaning him out. It's no surprise that PSG don't want to loan him once again next season. And, you know, I would be stunned if anyone thought that Xavi Simons wasn't going to walk into this PSG team. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how Luis Enrique does, you know, build with him for the future, because clearly he is planning to have him at his disposal. So, you know, I don't think it necessarily would have taken Mbappe. I think the issue was when only Messi had left, so technically Neymar was still there as well as Mbappe. So, you know, there was no real obvious spot for Simons to walk into. And obviously PSG were signing some of the other, you know, players who sort of occupy those roles as well, like, you know, Lee Kang-in, Dembele, Asensio as well. So, you know, there looked like a lot of competition at the time. But I think Simons now, after his explosive form with Leipzig, will feel like he, you know, he would merit a starting role based on that.
And let's stick with Mbappe here for a second. And it's a topic that I've talked about, and I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this. Mbappe in the Olympics. Do you see Mbappe's desire to play in the Olympics? We all know this summer they're going to be in Paris. He really wants to represent France in the Olympics, hopefully to win gold. But all reports indicate that Real Madrid are going to put their foot down and say no. They have to release him for the Olympics. And for what we're hearing, they're not interested in letting him play in the Olympics. And this would be after the Euros as well. So a lot of football this summer. Do you see that being a major issue for Mbappe? Potentially something that PSG could use to hopefully turn the tides and maybe keep Mbappe? Just how big of an issue do you see this Mbappe wanting to play in the Olympics and Real Madrid saying no? How big of an issue is that?
I mean, it is quite strange, and to be honest, it's really odd that it took people so long to talk about it, because it had clearly, you know, been something that was part of Mbappe's thinking, you know, way back when he signed the contract extension and rejected joining Real at the time. You know, and I think initially he made it kind of like a deal breaker with Real Madrid. Now there's maybe more of a sense that, you know, a sort of last resort, if it's the only way to sort of make sure that move happens, that he probably, you know, accept not being able to go to the Olympics. I mean, the same might apply to someone like Leny Yoro, who normally would have been kind of nailed on to be part of that Olympic squad. I mean, I do think it's going to be a tricky summer for Thierry Henry in terms of being able to poach the best talents from outside of France to come and be part of his team. It sounds like quite a few French clubs are waking up now to the sort of necessity and the right thing to do to allow the players to go to the Olympics if they're called upon. But, you know, bringing it back to sort of the debate about Mbappe and sort of how important it is, I mean, his communication in this has been key, and it's kind of what has some of the stuff that's been said has not quite been in line with the truth. I mean, basically, up until Mbappe opted out of the final year of his contract, there was an agreement with PSG that he would be released to play in the Paris Olympics. Now, obviously, with that contract not running until 2025, you know, he won't be a PSG player by the time the Olympics roll around. So there is also a scenario maybe that he signs for Real Madrid but only joins after the Olympics. There's also a strange scenario where his contract expires with PSG and he's a free agent and plays in the Olympics without having a club and then signs for Real Madrid after it. But the risks associated with that in terms of insurance, stuff like that, you know, should he get injured on international duty without a club, what it could potentially do to his career as well. You know, I think that risk is too big to make. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I just find Mbappe's communication on the matter hasn't quite, you know, been the same throughout the entire debate about it, because at the beginning he was very keen on it, very clear that he wanted to do it. Now he's coming out and saying some kind of things like, at the end of the day, it's the the club that will decide when, you know, he knows Fulham well. And it's, you know, he's quoted from years ago after his contract extension as saying that it was part of the discussions for him to stay with PSG to be able to participate in the Olympic Games. So, yeah, I think inconsistency from Mbappe and his camp regarding that. And yeah, it's no surprise that, you know, it's hit a hitch regarding the Olympics in terms of his potential protracted move to Real Madrid. And yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, there is now a chance that Mbappe, I guess, has to sacrifice his Olympic dream, which certainly wasn't part of the plan even 12 months ago.
Yeah, I just have to think that if PSG, if they somehow get past Barcelona, and you're thinking, hey, we got to the semifinals of the Champions League, win Ligue 1, win the Coupe de France, you know, the money's going to be there. You know, is there still an opportunity? It might just be hopeful thinking here, but as a PSG supporter, but, you know, and if they say, hey, you can go play in the Olympics, I do wonder if he starts to maybe think and sign another two-year contract. Who knows? We'll have to see. Jonathan, I got one more question for you. You watch a lot of Ligue 1 games. We know that this is the League of Talents. There's a lot of players. We talked about Lenny Yoro, Todibo as well. Is there an under-the-radar player in the French League that you think could be a good fit at PSG? Maybe a player that isn't as high profile, that hasn't been in the transfer rumor mill. Is there someone out there that you really highly rate that you think Luis Campos, if we could take his attention away from the Portuguese League and say, hey, look at this player, who would that be?
I mean, funnily enough, it wouldn't actually be that far away. It wouldn't be that far away from Lenny Yoro. I'd actually be looking at Chevalier, the Lille goalkeeper. I know Donnarumma's had like a good run of form recently. So, you know, that's not as much of an issue as it has been in the past. But for me, long term, I think that Chevalier, not only for club, but for country, will be, you know, an established starting presence. You know, that's the kind of profile player I think I'd be keeping an eye on as well, especially if PSG end up missing out on Euro. You know, I think potentially trying to prize two star talents away from Lille in Euro and Chevalier would have been quite difficult. But certainly if you can't get one, definitely try and get the other.
Fantastic. Jonathan, always a pleasure. We'll let you run. Thank you so much for joining. We'll have you on again soon.
Likewise, always a pleasure. Thanks a lot for having me. Looking forward to the game next week, and yeah, catch up soon.